Welcome to Revealing Men, conversations that pull back the curtain, revealing the inner lives of men. I'm Randy Flood, psychotherapist and director of the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan. Today, I'd like to welcome Ken Porter and Joe Coley, who are fellow group members of mine. We've been participating in what is called a leaderless men's group for how long, guys? Since 2000 or 2001?
No, 2004, maybe.
Okay, so about 2004.
I think.
A long time.
Yeah. So they are therapists in town, but they're also friends and colleagues. And originally, we had this idea that came from another person who instituted it and wanted to create this men's professional group to help with developing business plans and then bring in our personal life into, you know, because we all run our own businesses. And so we were starting out with that theme. And then here we are in 2021, and it has evolved, but we are the core group, core members, and we've had people come and go. But we decided to get together today and talk about the value of that, that we each experience as a way of maybe inspiring other men who are listening today to consider whether it's in your faith community or whether it's in your neighborhood or whether the guys you gather with together to play poker, you could have an alternative group besides just playing poker. And I think guys are used to doing shoulder-to-shoulder activities together, but this is more intentional, knee-to-knee. We're going to talk about what the hell we do every other Wednesday for a couple hours in the morning. So just to start out with, you know, Ken and Joe, why don't you guys just, and I'll say a little bit as well, about what value it brings to your life and why do you continue to do it?
Sure. Okay, I'll start. This is Ken. What value? It's like it's a huge value for me, like just to be able to have a place where I know that I can be real, I can be authentic, I can be vulnerable with other men. Just given the conditioning that we all started off with, you know, about masculinity and what that means, and you know, more of the John Wayne model. it's really refreshing and really healing to know that, you know, I can continue to like redo some of that conditioning and you know, keep my heart open. And so I find it very healing. I find it very grounding. I find it very centering.
Okay. Thanks, Ken. What about for you, Joe? How would you describe it for yourself?
Well, bottom line for me, it's a safe place where I can be an insecure father. It's a safe place where I can be an insecure husband. It's a safe place where I can be a mess. So I've never had a men's group like this. And the value that comes out of that is tremendous. It doesn't mean I want to bring my crap every time to this group. You know, there are plenty of times I come and I'm like, I'm not even sure I want to go today. But even if I don't want to bring my own stuff to the group, then to be able to be there for either of you is just so, so important that I've learned how to be there with other men and hold space for, you know, whoever is a mess that day or whoever needs to, you know, deal with whatever they're dealing with. Right. And then I come away and I'm always like, yeah, I'm glad I went again.
Yeah.
And that experience is invaluable.
Yeah. Yeah, I resonate with both of what you guys say about the value of the group. I like it because it's unique and distinct in my life. I gather with men in various ways. You know, I've played softball with men. I've biked with men. I've sit around fires and tell jokes with men. And all of that's fun and great. And I want to continue. But this is special and rich and unique because it gives me a safe space to know where I can come in and just be honest about what's going on in my life and talk about it on a deeper level with this intention to learn about what's going on inside of me, because I think I sometimes think I have it all figured out, and then I come here and talk to you guys, and you guys know me really well, and you challenge me and ask very probing questions and notice that I'm having emotion that I maybe don't want to acknowledge, and you stop me, and then I end up having to feel feelings that are hard to feel. And so I love that. It's, you know, a workout. It's an emotional workout to come here. And sometimes I don't want to come here. I know I got to talk about shit I don't want to talk about, stuff that's going on in my life that's causing me a lot of anxiety and insecurity. And so then I come here and I got to kind of get naked with you guys, you know, and reveal myself. And I just feel that vulnerability and I want to turn away from it. But I know it's good for me. And that's why I continue to do it.
You're not the perfect man who runs the men's resource center?
Hey, I am the great powerful Oz. You may not come behind the curtain. You know, that's a great metaphor. Yeah. It's like, you know, this is the place where I can pull back the curtain and reveal the little old man who works the levers of the great powerful Oz.
Right.
So Ken, you talked about kind of this re-socialization and you run men's groups with me here at the Men's Resource Center, and that's a lot of what we do is we're kind of re-socializing guys and saying, okay, let's see if you're tough enough and courageous enough to sit down in a circle with other guys and be real. And so that is a form of rewiring our brains and kind of developing maybe parts of our brain that went into atrophy from the socialization process that says, you know, man up, suck it up, make it on your own, and we're trying to do something different. So I wonder if you guys can talk a little bit about this rewiring or resocialization process that you think is happening for us.
Yeah. I'll pick up with kind of what you were just saying earlier about being real and, you know, being like letting yourself be vulnerable and exposed and go to the places you don't want to go. To me, that's a big part of the resocialization or the rewiring is, you know, I think regardless of if it's a men's group or a women's group or a mixed group, you know, I think there's value in allowing yourself to be seen in such a vulnerable way to be real, because I think a big part of what we, most of us, missed in our socialization was adequate mirroring. And when it comes to masculinity, a lot of that lack of mirroring was, you know, we didn't get the sensitive parts of ourselves mirrored to us. We didn't get the things that were not considered the John Wayne male mirrored to us. So we either had to hide that or bury that or try to shut it off. And so to, you know, to be able to be vulnerable in a group of men like you, it does rewire the brain. It does, like, take me to places. It takes all of us to places where it's like, yeah, it was scary to open up to this. It was scary to confront, you know, this edge. But once I do it and I'm met with compassion and understanding, it's so powerfully healing.
Yeah, that's a great point, that when you don't get it mirrored, then as a young boy, you tell yourself that this is an unacceptable part of me that I need to figure out how to get rid of, or I need to hide it. Otherwise, I'm not going to get the love and affection from the man pack, we call it, or, you know, the acceptance of that I'm a real man. And so you hide those parts of yourself. And then what we know about the brain is that, you know, use it or lose it. So that emotional intelligence doesn't get developed.
Correct. And developmentally, I think when I look at how our group has grown, we've experienced that, because in the beginning, the mirroring was scary.
Yeah.
It was uncomfortable. I don't want to bring my stuff into this group. And and I knew, you know, both of you, more Ken, would would mirror it back to me in a way that would scare the bejeebies out of me. But that was part of it. Mm-hmm. And but now, I mean, I can come every Wednesday and we do some silence and we drop and mm-hmm. I can just speak it out, whatever insecurities I'm resonating with in that moment. I think we've gone through a real, you know, right. growth with that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you say you are not as fearful of it. And I just think of, again, guys are attuned to what it takes to perform physically. Like I remember when my friend first asked me if, hey, you want to run the, Craig Verberg, my late friend, want to run the riverbank with me? And I had never run more than 3 miles before. And I'm like, hell no, there's just no way I can run that. Are you kidding me? Oh, you can do it. So anyway, I ran like 10 or 15 of them before my knees gave out. And I think that emotional intelligence is similar in that when you first start being vulnerable and feeling feelings for the first time and having other people mirror and be there, it's like, it's really difficult, scary, and it seems like, this is not something I want to do or can do. And then you say, now I can come and say, oh, stuff might come up for me, but I have some trust in myself that I'm going to handle what emerges or whatever, or what comes up for you. I feel I can hold space for you without getting overwhelmed or scared. It's not that it's easy, but it's you develop a strength in an emotional intelligence or something. I'm not sure I'm saying it quite right, but mm-hmm. yeah.
And we need each other to rewire. I mean,
no, I'm a rugged individualist. Come on, Ken.
Yeah, no, we need each other to wire in the first place. You know, we need each other to develop into a person. We need that mirroring.
Right.
And then if the mirroring, you know, isn't there and we go askew, then we need each other to bring ourselves back into some kind of internal harmony or right. integration.
Yeah. And I think the need I have is that what we often bring, you said it at the beginning, Joe, is, you know, I'm an imperfect husband and I'm an insecure this and all these things, is that oftentimes what we bring is, we have these relationships outside this group. We have relationships with each other, but we have intimate partners. Some of us are parents, and some we have great friends, and stuff happens in those relationships that are emotionally laden, where we get triggered with all kinds of feelings that reenact old wounds or whatever. And this becomes a place to get more in touch with what's going on for us, because we think we know what's going on. And then I come here and start talking about it and you're like, you sure you're not doing this again, Randy? And mm-hmm. so I think that work we do here goes out into the world. What happens out in the world, we bring here. And that, I was wondering if you guys could talk about some of your personal experiences about the benefits of being a better version of yourself out there by doing the work, inner work here.
Well, first of all, I want to say I hope it doesn't scare people off that here we are still doing this work in that last 15 years and we're really still recirculating some of the old woundedness.
Well, say something about that.
Well,
it is a
practice, and it's a lifetime practice because we carry these into different stages of our life. So there's truth in it. But I also want, it's like, man, I don't want, some of these men are out there going, yeah, I don't want to go in some therapy group for 15 years. What the heck?
Right.
But that's yeah, there is, it's been quite right. the journey. And it is, even in 15 years, you know, we right. still get triggered. We still get,
right.
you know, and to have a safe place to bring our stuff to
right.
is amazing.
We don't do that any other place, right? We don't say, I don't want to exercise for X amount of years. I want to exercise for 5 years, and then I want to sit on the couch the rest of my life. Or I want to go to my faith community for, you know, 5-10 years, and then I'm going to be a spiritual giant. Then I can sit on my couch. I mean, but for some reason, we have this myth or this delusion that we don't need to do this work, or if we do it, it's fix the problem and be done
right.
type of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And now it's more of just like, we've entered this non-dual space where we can look at our joys and our affirmations and our strengths, and we can address our shadow sides. whatever we need to do. And that's the dance I hope we're doing better compared to, say, 15 years ago. And I think mm-hmm. I am. Mm-hmm. Do you agree? There's my insecurities coming out again.
You regress sometimes, but mostly you're kind of the arc is always progression.
We'll bring that up in the next session, Randy.
I'll say, too, for, you know, like, I feel like I am more courageous as a result of being in this group for 15 years. Mm. Like, in my life outside of here, it's just that, you know, it's a whole lot easier to be real with people when something comes up that I feel insecure about, I feel scared to say something. Mm. It's like, but like the courage just has gotten like reinforced, you know, week after week of meeting with, you know, in this group. And, you know, there's, of course, other factors that are building my courage too, but this is a huge one.
Yeah. So courage, again, kind of for guys, I think we are socialized to think of physical courage more so, like what do we do that could risk physical injury is, you know, mm-hmm. jumping out of an airplane or, you know, storming the beaches or whatever. There's this courage there, and that's very noble and that's well-respected if it's a good mission. But this kind of courage you're talking about, Ken, is not necessarily recognized as something that men do. Is the courage to be seen, the courage to share your heart, and potentially not receive all the love and care and that validation you think you deserve. Maybe you're distorting or something you need to be challenged on, but it's this vulnerability and the courage to pull back that curtain. So you're saying this has helped build that courage by being here, and then you're more courageous out there.
Yeah, it's definitely a different level of courage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess the courage, you know, I mean, whenever there's courage, obviously there's fear.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think the fear is rejection, you know? Mm. If I'm real, you're going to reject me. You're not going to like me anymore. You're not going to love me anymore. Mm. And I think, you know, what you're speaking to about our typical male socialization is that, you know, we gain, or we try to gain our acceptance and our approval by being tough or being strong or being, you know, invincible, or, and then the better we are at doing that or even conveying that, the more we get the sense of external approval. And so, like I think the bottom line, regardless, is that there is a fear of not having that approval. And so, you know, you kind of have like a couple of choices. One choice is to just keep like hammering away at being the baddest, toughest version of yourself you can be. And the other option is to say, well, what if I allow myself to be open and vulnerable and then, you know, expose myself? And what if the other person still accepts me? Hmm. Wow, that's a risk worth taking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, and I think there's something about doing this work is a form of weakness or being emasculated, that, you know, you're going to drown in a puddle and you become diminished when you reveal yourself. And I think that's something that I have found empowering, is realizing that that's not true, that when I work on my inner life and when I work on being more vulnerable, it doesn't negate my masculinity. You know, I can still compete and I can still, you know, do all the typical masculine things, and I still enjoy bike riding. I still enjoy all those things. It's not a, you know, this dualism where you think that if you're working on one, it's going to negate the other, like a zero-sum game.
Right.
And you, Joe, you're like a tennis pro. with your new hip or new knee, right? I forget which one it is.
That's how I had to balance myself out. You know, I had to get metal on one side and then realized I needed metal on the other side. So a right hip and a left knee.
There you go.
But speaking to, you know, the courage, I definitely, you know, want to affirm that in you, Ken. I have seen you, you know, just become such a much more courageous person in the last 15, 16 years. And we've known each other a lot farther back. It goes way back. Mm-hmm. But it's the power of vulnerability, which is so terrifying for many of us men. I remember one time in this room when we had our circle, and you know what? I don't even remember. It's not even important what I was upset about or vulnerable about or scared about. I don't remember that, but what I remember is I ended up on my knees hugging a pillow, kind of bent over almost like in a kneeling, you know, position of proneness. And the two of you came over and put your hands on my back and kind of cradled me. Yeah. And I just remember that because of afterwards, I felt this incredible, you know, support. I mean, it's kind of like, in a weird way, you guys were creating a womb space for me, you know, holding me and letting me go through whatever I was going through in the moment. I don't remember what.
I think you lost a tennis match. No, I think it was a little more profound than that.
I hope so. Either that or I still have a lot of competition issues to work through.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I think we all have had those moments in here. And it's interesting. It's like we think it's all about the content in our life, right?
And the insights.
We got to get these insights, you know, and then we carry those insights. And then, you know, insights are great. We like those little nuggets in life. But sometimes it's just whatever it was for you, but just to be able to feel the depths of those emotions and be honest about it and then have this level of support and mirroring did this rewiring just helped you have this confidence and you carry that inside of you and you don't have to remember exactly what the subject was.
Exactly.
Or the content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think also the part that I have been taught by being in this group too is there's a lot of talk these days, the Surgeon General currently that was Obama's former, that's now Biden's Murphy or something like that. I forget his name, but he's done a lot of studying, trying to do something new because he's, you know, a Surgeon General wants to take on a public health issue that's new. And so he's done this a lot of studying and research cumulatively and looking at loneliness in America. Mm. It's a huge problem. And they're saying that that's, you know, the new smoking, that has taken like 10 years off our life, this sense of isolation and loneliness. And I think, you know, again, that there's women have issues with loneliness in as, you know, can in unique ways and similar ways as men. But I think of, again, the John Wayne ethos, that there's so much pressure on men to make it alone. And if you don't, that there's maybe something wrong with you, that you need others, that only weak men or men who aren't John Wayne-ish are the ones who need these circles or need these connections. And I just think that that's a fallacy and a myth that goes against how we're created as pack animals, as people who lived in tribes and all of, you know, you look back as far as you can look back, we're always together in communities. And that's one thing I appreciate is that I'm less lonely when I'm with you guys. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Me three.
Yeah. And, you know, circling back to an earlier point, I'm less lonely outside of this group because I'm learning in this group how to be less lonely. You know, I'm learning how to be more connected.
Right.
Yeah.
You experience, I think there's this idea, I mean, and this is one of the things I had to reckon with, that it's like, well, why would men be lonely when they golf together, play softball together, and they do all these things together, they work together and stuff like that? And it's like, I mean, I think when you experience deeper levels of connection and then you then go out into the world and experience more of a superficial connection, and again, I'm not dismissing some of those gatherings are wonderful and great. But if that's all you have, then being around people without feeling any intimacy almost radiates loneliness.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that feeling of being alone in the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having all these, you hear sometimes that these men, you know, will suicide and then all their friends go, well, why would, didn't he say anything?
Yeah.
No one, he no, didn't talk about it or whatever. It's, it comes as a surprise. Mm-hmm. He seemed okay.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the tears of a clown kind of a thing. Mm.
Yeah, I didn't read the article, but I highlighted it and haven't gotten back to it. But and along the same lines, yeah. There was some AP study and it said how few people have at least even one person they could trust in their life right now. Did you see that recent article?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm.
But again, it speaks to that reality that so many people, and particularly men, not to say others can't, but, you know, don't really have that person that they can rely on, that they can trust, and then develop, you know, this compulsive self-reliance. They can only rely on themselves, you know. And, you know, I had a little bit of that growing up, you know. I mean, because my own family upbringing, I had to kind of figure out how to, you know, take care of myself. And, again, the culture saying, you know, be independent, be strong. And, my wife definitely hammered me on my control issues early in the relationship. Yes, yes. Okay. And they still come out every now and then.
Sure.
But again, that's another piece of what this group has done. Mm-hmm. Allowed me not to have to be that compulsively self-reliant person.
Yeah.
That I can let it go. And then what are the lessons? What are the lessons to give that up?
Yeah.
You know, and what we have learned from each other in group.
Right. That bird was mirroring you and agreeing with you, or maybe contradicting you.
Cosmic connection.
Cosmic connection. Right. I think one of the more traditional masculine things that the group provides is, you know, sometimes a lot of guys will get into these accountability groups, you know, and faith communities, you know, you check in about something that you're trying to work on. And I do think that we also provide that for each other. You know, there's
sure.
new habits we're trying to create or things we're trying to do differently. And mm-hmm. and we have kind of have to check in with each other about that, how that's going. I know that we've had some food programs and different yeah. things. And mm-hmm. So I think that that's also another feature of kind of gathering and, you know, and kind of holding each other accountable. And I've valued that.
Yeah, I think that's valuable too. I think there, you know, we've talked about how there's different levels that we operate on in the group. like, you know, that accountability level is one level, and sometimes that's exactly what you need. Mm-hmm. It's important. And then other times it's like, well, it's important to do a deep dive.
Yeah.
You know, and to me a deep dive means like really slowing things down, really quieting things down and just listening. Mm-hmm. Inside, internally, listening for what really wants to emerge. And that's something I just hugely value about this group is mm-hmm. that we do that for each other. We yeah. we create that safe space for that quietness to happen. And
right.
that's not easy to find, you know.
Right.
And it's just not easy to find in our culture. I think our culture tends to be like, okay, let's get to the solution. Let's figure right. this out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're so right about that, Ken, because it's catalytic. Because mm-hmm. I remember it was a month or so in the group where, you know, I was just lamenting and frustrated and amped up about, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the speed of life has like resumed now with everything opening up again.
Right.
And as much as I have such a heart for all the people who were so impacted by the pandemic and the grief and all that, one of the good lessons was it allowed me to slow down mm-hmm. and have some of that space. And it feels yeah. like I've let that space go again. And a mm-hmm. month ago, I was just like, ugh. Mm-hmm. You guys kind of held me accountable to take some time after the group, and I did it. And then I chose to email the group that I did it and how it was valuable to me. And I even wrote some prose and I sent it out to you. I hadn't done that in a long time. And it was really, really helpful.
Yeah.
So, the group, that's a good sign. It's one of the lessons from our group. It is catalytic. It's not just about what we do in that moment with each other.
Right.
I think we get stuck in our old patterns, our comfortable patterns of wanting to just talk about it. And then, and sometimes we do, and there's sort of practical advice about some things, or sometimes we request that from each other. I just need, can you give me some of your thoughts about how you think I should handle something? But there's times where I remember you guys stopping me, or we stop someone else and say, you look like you're feeling something. It just probably would be good to just take some time and stop talking. Because there's intelligence in your body that you might, and there's messages in your body you might need to listen to as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I like that we try to do that with each other. No?
Yeah. There's a good acronym called WAIT. Hmm. Why am I talking?
I like that one. You've never shared that one before. I'm going to steal that one.
Steal it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, if there's people listening, other guys listening right now and hearing us chat about all this, and you guys, as we kind of wind down, want to offer words of encouragement for someone who maybe is lonely or is kind of hearing this and interested, intrigued by it, and they're in Kansas, they're somewhere, and we offer online support groups for men that they can get involved in, and we do in-person groups here, Ken, and that's professionally led, and that's certainly available and sometimes very much needed to do the work that we do in the leaderless groups. But just what would you want to say to someone out there listening and saying, boy, this resonates with me, and I'd like to get started with something or do something? What do you want to say to them?
Yeah, it's hard to address that because that's such a broad spectrum of where people are at, on their journey.
Yeah.
I think for someone who feels like they have no friendships where they would feel safe approaching a friend and saying, "Hey, I'm really, listen to this podcast. I'm really really want to, maybe get a group of men together to do something like this." I mean, that I think I would say to somebody like that, I think the important thing is to, to get into therapy, to do some individual work and start to heal some patterns. Mm-hmm. Because as you heal those individual patterns, you will impact your relationships.
Right.
You will affect the people around you, and you will also start to attract people who are more drawn to that openness and vulnerability. Mm. But to men who who do have relationships where they feel some kind of safety, I would encourage you to just, take the risk, and approach, one person and say, hey, let me share this with you. This is something that makes a lot of sense to me now that I've heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Can we start getting together and seeing, what it's like to be vulnerable and real with each other.
Okay. Yeah.
I add and agree with everything you said, Ken. And I just add that if somebody's listened to this and it makes them wonder, it means you're listening to an auditory, what's the word I'm looking for?
Format,
information.
Right.
And so, go get more. There are so many, I have so many spiritual fathers in my life now that I wish I would have been more exposed to when I was younger.
Yeah.
I did some reading and I think I did quite a bit of searching, but now I lift up to spiritual fathers like Matthew Fox for me or Father Richard Rohr, there's even, somebody locally, that you know, you can go and get auditory books or mm-hmm. podcasts, or they're out there. You know, if you're not ready to yet take that step into really, you know, into the group or into that that connection, start reading more. You probably, Randy, can list even more men, you know, spiritual fathers out there that you've come across, because that's your, you know, niche.
Yeah.
But I think that's, go find them. They're out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's many ways. I mean, this is, you know, one way of personal growth is getting a men's group, but there's many ways. And I appreciate you mentioning that, Joe. It's just, you know, you're listening to this podcast. There's many others out there. We have different episodes to listen to. So keep listening to us and Revealing Men. And then there's many, many books on tape and different ways of continuing to do your work. So gathering as men, let's, you know, we'll continue to gather, you know, playing sports and playing cards and cutting down trees. And, you know, those are beautiful ways of gathering, but this is another way. And I've thoroughly benefited and enjoyed over the years of gathering with you guys. And so I appreciate you guys being willing to come in here and talk about it with me.
Yeah. So likewise.
Yeah. Thanks, Ken.
It's been a great journey.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Revealing Men. If you're looking for more information about counseling, coaching, and consultative services, please visit the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan online at menscenter.org. Also, feel free to contact us on our website if you have questions about this segment, ideas for a topic, or would like to be a guest on the Revealing Men podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating so others can find us. Be well and have a great day.